Thanks, Mario.
Shut up.
Okay. We ready? Margot and I were just listening to a recent recording by Paul, and I recalled something that I'd forgotten about. He starts off each session. I'm kind of tempted to do this as well, of taking a moment not only to be connected with one another, but to open ourselves up to the highest level of learning that is possible for us in this moment. Opening ourselves up to the highest aspect of learning that is available to us at this moment. And along with that is saying what we call sometimes unity's prayer of protection. He doesn't call it that, he just says it. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. And the presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is. That kind of puts everything in perspective. So, we are on page 7. And if you happen to be new, the book we are using is called The Book of Innocence by Paul Selig. I'm not exactly sure which number it is in the series, but that doesn't matter a whole lot. What matters more than anything else is that it speaks to us in this moment. And again, for those of you who might be new, if you don't have a book, that's okay because we read from it and then we comment on it. Or let me put it this way. We read from it and people let me comment on it. And then if they have anything you want to say, want to add, want to elucidate on, please feel free to do that. Page 7, The Book of Innocence. Starts off by talking about manifestation. We've already discussed this in some ways that essentially there are two basic kinds of manifestation. One is the one that most of us have learned from, like watching Oprah and reading The Secret, of creating something that wasn't there before. Like creating a relationship, creating health, creating wealth, creating something that was not physically present in the material world. And then the other kind of manifestation, more on a spiritual line, is not the creation of something, but the discovery or rediscovery of something that's already been there. So, for instance, if I am focused on the truth of being a divine child of God, I don't invent that. That just doesn't happen. It's already been there. I just realize it's already been there. And of course, my realization it's already been there works upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer. There's a whole lot of layers that I have to get through to really, really grasp that as being my truth. The irony is that when I am aligned to my divine consciousness, the truth of who I am, I don't need anything. There's absolutely nothing that I need to ask for because everything's there. And I realize that. That's sort of the irony of manifestation. Once you are aligned to your divine consciousness, there's nothing that you need. So one of the ways that we realize we are connected to our divine consciousness is there's no neediness around. I just am. Now it doesn't mean there's no activity. That's another paradox. Even when I am growing in my I amness. Even when I am discovering more about my I amness. So I'd just like you to keep those things in mind as we go through this, because we are dealing with something that is rather mysterious. Can't be explained with the thinking mind. And so that's not what this is about. It's not. Paul's books are not about a whole bunch of books that explain the spiritual path. They are books that go beyond, well, the one we're using on Tuesday, beyond, what is it called? Beyond the known, revelation beyond the known, beyond the intellect. So if you have questions that pertain to the intellect, that's fine. Just realize that that's not really where most of the answers lie for us. Paul interrupts. Oh, I might as well put a little bridge in here. Page 7. The teaching of the upper room, higher consciousness, Christ consciousness. The teaching of the upper room, the teaching of reception, is of course a teaching of manifestation, but manifestation through being, not getting. Through alignment and reception, not stamping one's feet, shaking one's fist to the sky and saying, I demand what I get, be as I say. If any of you got what you truly thought you needed, you might be grateful for it. But instead, you find yourself disappointed because you are not receiving what you wish, what you have designed, and what you thought was so. Came across a quote from a wise man years and years ago who said, enlightenment is the ego's greatest disappointment. It's never what you think it is. It has nothing to do with getting something. It has more to do with being in a higher state of consciousness. And I forget that a lot. Paul interrupts, as usual. That's one of Paul's jobs. Paul is a scribe, but he's also kind of sits in for each one of us when we have a question and are a little bit hesitant to ask it. Paul will raise his hand and say, I object. I don't understand. Paul interrupts. There are many teachings of manifestation that say we should outline what we get. So you're sitting there with your little plan book, making sure that God knows exactly what you're saying. You may outline all if you wish. Perhaps you will get the kitten with the long whiskers that you have asked for, but perhaps a pony would be a better gift for you. That's another one. Instead of thinking about what you need and asking for it, open yourself up to having what you need be supplied by your divine consciousness rather than something else. So God, I don't know what I need. I think I do, but I don't know what I need. But when I open myself up to the truth of that, you will supply to me what it is that I need, that I desire, that will help me be most helpful to me in this moment of my life. Don't preclude the pony because the kitten is what you think you need. You don't trust the divine enough to allow it to know you. God, I don't know the answer. You do. Show me. And you must understand this. You assume the divine does not know you, does not know your heart's desire, and does not wish what you wish. So you confuse yourself in writing long lists of gets and shoulds and must be's, and you wave to the sky and say, this is my list. Thank you, Santa Claus. I'll go back to my business now of getting what I want or making another list. When one knows who she is, She knows herself in agreement in consort with her true nature. Her true nature, his true nature, is of source because it cannot be of other. When we say you can't make yourself holy, we are speaking to this principle. You already are of God. You have just denied it, or ignored it, or forgotten it. And in this denial, you have created systems to manifest what you think you should have, but you don't understand. Your entire life, the collective world that you experience, is also a manifestation of consciousness born in expectation, claimed by desire, and through the agreement to the denial of the divine. That sounds pretty harsh. But if it's true that we create the world that we live in, and you look around, say, why the hell did I create that? Where'd that come from? And essentially, we can create either from fear or from love. We're obviously living in a world right now that is imbued with fear. Let's bomb them before they bomb us. Or let's bomb them because they might bomb us. A world without God is a world that operates as separate. How often do we live in separateness? I mean, I do. I forget. That's why I do this on Sunday mornings, right? So I can remember a little bit better. A world without God is a world that operates as separate. This is not a world that requires religion. Religion can be useful as a doorway or a path for some. All religions hold great truths and have been distorted through misuse of teachings, embellishment of truth by those who would seek power, and if useful now, are primarily useful as a doorway or permission to have a relationship with the source. Religion is not the answer. Religion might give us a hint of what's available to us if we are open to it. Jesus was not in favor of organized religion. Unfortunately, what happened was, as soon as Paul put a pen in his hand and started writing epistles to people, he started putting a context in organized religion. He started creating organized religion. Probably with a good intention, that this is really good stuff. So I want to make sure people get it. But as soon as we start doing that, we start creating doctrines. We start creating things that are solid. We start creating things that are more of the material world than they are of the spiritual world. All religions hold great truth and have been distorted through misuse of teachings, embellishment of truth by those who would seek power, and if useful now, are primarily useful as a doorway or permission to have a relationship with the source. One of my favorite examples of that, and I know I've used this one before, but I'll use it again, is, Lord, I am not worthy. We took that little piece, that little quote, right, and made it into a club where we beat ourselves over the head or realize or think that, yes, I must have done, things did not work out the way I planned, so I must have done something wrong. Or there must be something wrong with me, or I am not enough. Whereas the reality of the Roman centurion saying that to Jesus, Lord, I am not worthy that thou should come under my roof, but only say the word and my servant shall be healed, was basically, in a sense, saying, I don't want to bother you. You don't have to travel a couple of miles to walk to my house. You can perform a miracle of healing my servant right where you stand. I believe that's true. That's where the real message was. It wasn't about worthiness. Wasn't about doing something wrong. It was like, I don't want to bother you. You can heal my servant from where you stand. But see, once I put you in a position of neediness, of something being wrong with you, and I happen to be a priest or a bishop, then I've got power over you. And the more I reinforce, oh Lord, I am not worthy, the more power I have over you. And the more power you become willing to give up and give away. But a relationship with Source is an ongoing relationship. It is not prescribed by dictate, mandate, or law. Any relationship will alter as it matures, will deepen as it grows, and your relationship with the Source must be predicated on a belief and an agreement that God, or whatever we wish to call God, knows who you are, that you are not operating as a shipwreck survivor floating on a log in the ocean seeking God. God is the log. God is the ocean. God is the experience of all. You're always in God because you cannot not be. You are always in God because you cannot not be. So we could say, what are we doing here on Sunday morning? Remembering. Not only remembering in my mind, but putting it back together again, Humpty Dumpty, putting it back together again so it makes sense and can flow in and with my life. It was in a little book called, Mr. God, This Is Anna, one of my favorite little kids' books, spirituality books, where Anna says to Finn, who is this big longshoreman who adopted her, even Mr. Jether, which was her name for Jesus, even Mr. Jether just came to help us remember. Truth is already there. Even Mr. Jether's job was just to help us remember. Gosh, I haven't thought about that one in a long time. Now, the choice to agree to this comes with an action. It's not passive. The choice to agree is a claim itself. And the claim we have offered you, I am in the upper room. I am in Christ consciousness. I am beyond my literal thinking mind, is a claim made by the monad, the truth of who you are, in agreement to will to support the divine expressed as the one claiming it. What this means is the choice to align an act of will, if you wish to say it that way, is your contribution. I am willing. I am open to the possibility of being aligned to my divine truth. It goes beyond thought, goes beyond desire, goes beyond what a book tells me, goes beyond what everybody else does, goes beyond my experience of this moment because it opens me up to experience in the next moment, and the next moment, the next moment, the next moment. There's nothing static about this. You have a realization of who you are right now more than you did a moment ago. You might not realize that, you might not think that, but that happens to be the truth. You are more aware of the truth of who you are than you were a moment ago. And your mind goes, well, that's not true. It's not about your mind. I would suggest if you are not, how do I want to put this? If you are not more aware of your divine self in this moment than you were in a moment ago, you'd probably just get up and leave. What am I doing here? Nothing's changed. But see, it has. Each one of us certainly include myself in this process, each one of us is more aware of the presence of the divine presence of our heart, our soul, our being than we were a moment ago. You are a unique expression of divine consciousness. And you are more a unique expression of divine consciousness in this moment than you were a moment ago. And you will be a moment from now, even in your forgetfulness. Wouldn't it be interesting if you said, even my forgetfulness is a reflection of God's presence? Even my forgetfulness is a sign, is a symbol of God's presence. The German mystic Meister Eckhart expressed that one of the ways to God is called the via negativa, the negative way. He didn't mean that as a slur, but he said essentially what he was saying was sometimes the yearning for God is the same as the presence of God. So when you feel lost and alone or empty, the dark night of the soul, when you feel that inside yourself, that is another way. You might not realize it. That's another way of listening to God speaking to you. I speak to you through my absence or through my seeming absence. I cannot really be absent from it. It's impossible. I cannot be absent from anyone or anything. It's a little bit more difficult, or maybe a lot more difficult, to find God in his absence, but still there. I know that for a fact. Been through that one before. I'll probably be through that one again. What this means is the choice to align an act of will, if you wish, to say it that way, is your contribution. Imagine you go to a friend's house for dinner and you knock on the table and say, "Where is the beef bourguignon? And where's the pastry I asked for?" And you go to your friend's house for dinner and are grateful for what is served. What is served in the upper room is always in agreement to your true needs. In other words, you don't plan this out. Each Sunday morning, I could pick up this book and say, "Well, I think I'll read ahead, see what the lesson's all about." And then that will make whatever description I have and whatever teaching that'll make it a lot clearer from what and I'm going to do that. In order for this to be real, it needs to be whole, it needs to be spontaneous, and it needs to be open for yourself as well as for others. I am open in this moment of time to the truth of who I am. I am open in this moment of time to the truth of who I am. You go to your friend's house for dinner. You don't write the menu. You are open, you are happy, you are pleased with what is being offered to you. So at 10 minutes to 11, when we start to break up, you walk away. "Well, that wasn't what I expected. I didn't get what I wanted. I didn't get what I needed." How do I know? How do I know I didn't get what I needed? How do I know it was perfect for me just in this moment? Many of you come from a system born in separation, lack, and fear, which supports a belief that there cannot be enough. Or God would wish you to have a crumb when the one beside you gets the entire piece of cake. I am enough. You are enough. How did Jesus put it? My grace is sufficient for you. You don't need anything other than what you It might seem you do. You might think you do. But my grace is sufficient for you. My love is sufficient for you. My acceptance of who you are is sufficient for you. My knowing that you are enough is sufficient for you. You limit God because the God you have claimed has been limited by you in expectation through prior conditioning and belief. To know the self as worthy of all it is must require that you know the one beside you to be. Yes. The boat doesn't leave unless everybody's on it. And you don't choose who you sit next to. We're not talking about egos and personalities here. We're talking about the truth of who you are. To know the self is worthy of all it is must require that you know the one beside you to be. When Thomas Merton saw all of these people as being beings of light, he had to be a being of light himself in order to be able to see that. In order for me to know the truth of who I am, I must also reaffirm the truth of who you are. Or the flip side of that is that if I put you in darkness, I put myself there as well. I might not even realize that. I hate you. Notice in a setting that we're in right now, notice how jarring that is. All of a sudden it comes out in a way, it's almost like a spear going through my heart, as Thomas Merton put it. The arrow which was I shoot my enemy has to pass through my own heart first. The arrow which with I shoot my enemy has to pass through my own heart first. By the way, the Buddha put it, the golden rule. See yourself in others, who then shall you harm? Really? See yourself. Now, I'm not there yet, or I don't perceive myself being there yet a lot of times. But here's the key. I am willing to be aware of that. I am willing, and I am open to the possibility that I can see others the way God sees them. I can see you the way God sees you. You limit God because the God that you have claimed has been limited by you in expectation through prior conditioning and belief. To know the self is worthy of all it is must require that you know the one beside you to be. You are not the gift of the kingdom. The gift of the kingdom is being and presence. And come as you, perhaps come as you think you are, but expressing beyond the limitation of the personality we choose to know itself through. Again, we're not talking about your ego or your personality. We're talking about the truth of who you are. Even if you can't totally grasp that, I am opening to realizing the truth of who I am. And by realizing the truth of who I am open to realizing the truth of who you are. All are worthy, you see, or no one is worthy. Either everyone's on the boat or no one's on the boat. And the one you put in darkness will call you to that darkness. Have tea in the darkness with you until you decide to release him or her from the dark that you sit in. You may stay there as long as you wish. And many of you may, because you cannot believe that allowing another to be as God as all things are will give you the liberation you seek. So if it happens to be Donald or the Ayatollah, whoever it happens to be, so I've got them in the dark, I'm in the dark as well. If I can't believe, I can't believe God could love somebody like that. I'm doing the same thing to myself. Because again, we're not talking about your personality. We're not talking about your ego structure. We're talking about the truth of who you are. And the truth of who you are is a child of the divine. Is a uni You are a unique expression of divine consciousness. And if that's true for you, it's true for everyone and everything. Even if you can't see that. If I can't see you with the eyes of the Christ, then I'm not looking at you through the eyes of the Christ. You may stay there as long as you wish. And many of you may, because you cannot believe that allowing another to be as God, be as of God, as all things are, will give you the liberation you seek. The liberation you seek is not just putting yourself in the light. The liberation you seek is putting everyone and everything in the light, holding it in the light. You would rather hold a prisoner in a cave, joining him or her in shadow, then lead her to the light that is God and freedom. You would rather hold a prisoner in a cave, joining him or her in shadow, then lead her to the light that is God and freedom. If it's true that we're all walking one another home, then we are all walking one another home. Sometimes we're in the lead, sometimes we're in the middle, sometimes we're in the back. Sangha.
What if we stay in the shadow because the reunion with God is too painful?
What if we remain in the shadow because
If the reunion with God is too painful.
I need to realize that opening myself up to divine truth sometimes is a painful process. How did Jesus put it again? I'm paraphrasing here because I don't remember the exact quote. But I am holding you as gold in the fire to be purified. And that doesn't always feel good. And so coming in contact with my true nature, the truth of who I am, sometimes means peeling away that stuff that is not me. And sometimes peeling away that stuff that is not me, which it almost has become part of who I think I am. Peeling that away is like kind of ripping off a band-aid, okay? It's hurtful. It's a psychic hurt. And so there are going to be some times when I choose to stay in that place of darkness or obliviousness, because it is or seems to be too painful to be able to get out of it. What I've learned about that one is, let's say, like, we can bring it to a very practical means of thinking of surrender. Let's say surrender during the process of healing of an addiction, whether that happens to be a food addiction, drug addiction, alcohol addiction, behavior addiction, gambling addiction, no matter what it happens to be. I realize that that's surrendering to a higher power or higher consciousness in my life. It's not just going to be like snapping my fingers. There's a grieving process that goes on, even when I'm grieving something that I want to get rid of. Seems funny or strange that way, but it's true. So anytime I am making a change or creating more freedom, creating more openness, creating more love, space for love, that it's in a very real way, it's kind of a two-edged sword. That part of that sword is cutting away all of that stuff that is not me, and realizing that in that process, it is, or can be, rather painful. Again, I'm not sure why I'm continuing to quote Jesus this morning, but he keeps coming to mind of, I have not come to bring peace, but the sword. And didn't that mean that in a physical sense, in a warlike sense? But I've come to challenge you to let go and to release all that is not who you truly, who the truth of who you are. Now, a step in the process of learning or moving through that is realizing, yes, I am frightened. I am scared. It does feel painful. And I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to be open to that. I'm willing to allow that to happen. I had a therapist years ago who I loved working with. She was very skilled in a number of different areas of psychotherapy, transpersonal psychology, body mind healing. And one of the first things she would do after we would talk about what we wanted to talk about, what our introduction to the material was, whatever was going to be covered that day, she would hold both of my hands and she would say, "Give me a yes answer." And my hands would kind of move in one direction. And then she would say, "Give me a no answer." And my hands would move in another direction. Kinesthetically, just very much in tune. And then she would say, "Once we've got that classified, we know what a no answer feels like, what a yes answer feels like." She would inevitably say, "Can we do this gently? Can we do this gently?" And if that was a no answer, we'd find a way to getting working through that or working around. But she wanted to make sure that we had a way, as difficult as whatever that pathway might have been, that we could do this gently in a way that's not scary or hurtful. It might be difficult, but can we do this gently? In your prayer this morning, however you pray that prayer this morning, that might be something you ask your divine consciousness, can we do this gently? Inevitably, the answer will be yes. Might not be the answer you want necessarily. Can we do this gently? Yes. Can we do this with love? Yes. Can we do this with caring? Yes. The claim, "I am in the upper room, I am in the Christ consciousness," supports all things in aligning to you at this level of choice. At this level of choice, all things can and will be made new. Now, being made new does not mean your teeth are fixed, your face is not wrinkled, or your idea of self is improved, self with a small s. It means new, re-seen, reclaimed, re-known in God, of God, and as of God. The tree is God, the cloud is God, and the one that was once your enemy is God. We use the word "of" there expressly, so that you don't believe that we are inviting you to worship an old enemy. You have left the tea table by then. It simply means you hold no recrimination because you have returned to innocence. I hold nothing against you. I hold nothing against myself because there's nothing to hold against myself. Surprisingly enough, what Spirit tells us is you have done nothing wrong. But, my mind says, seems that way. You have done. What would it be like to realize you have done nothing wrong? You have left the tea table by then. It simply means you hold no crimination because you have returned to innocence. The innocent heart does not seek to punish, does not seek to rule, does not seek to gain at the cost of another's loss. Let me say that again. The innocent heart does not seek to punish, does not seek to rule, does not seek to gain at the cost of another's loss. One of our classmates asked me a question about regret. And then when after we drop our bodies and we enter into a higher realm of consciousness, will there still be things we regret? And my answer to that is from what I know, what I think, is no, there will be no regrets. In fact, we will see the whole picture. We'll see how a mistake, or what we call a mistake, with I'm going to say, how that fits into the whole puzzle. Like, oh, that's where that goes. When I had a body, I could never quite find the right piece in that spot. Kept making the same mistake every time. That's how that is. That's how this other person's reaction or response to me fits. There's a piece of 12-step literature that says, sometimes referred to as part of what's called the 12 promises, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on. That's huge. I'll not regret it. In other words, I can still learn from my past. We will not regret the past and wish to shut the door on. And I must admit, there are a few things in my life that I still regret. And that every time I think about them, I offer them back up to divine consciousness. Lord, that I may see. Help me to see this the way I can see this as a road or an aspect of my healing. And maybe an aspect of somebody else's healing as well. Okay, I think that's a good place to stop. So we'll do kind of an extended meditation if you don't mind. So I'm going to suggest you put your stuff down. Get comfortable in your spot. Get in touch with the rhythm of your breathing. The beating of your heart. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. And the presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is. And all is well. My body is of God. My mind is of God. My past is of God. My future is of God. Even my regrets are of God. Because I realize my regrets are seeing the world through limitation. And I realize that I don't have to do that. I can see beyond my limitations. I can see beyond my self-imposed limitations. I am open to seeing myself as I truly am. I am open to the possibility and the willingness to see myself as I really am. In this moment, I am truly blessed. I hold myself in the light. I allow myself to be held in the light. All that is not of the light falls away. It's like walking into a darkened room and flipping on the light switch. What happened to the darkness? What happened to the shadows? They just disappeared. They could not exist, cannot exist in the presence of light. I desire to hold all beings, all creation, as an aspect of truth, as an aspect of life. I carry this with me throughout this day. There's joy in my heart. This love in my heart, this peace in my heart, this spaciousness in my heart. I am open to all of my needs being granted, being healed, being accepted, being loved. I hold this world in the light, not as a wounded place, but as a place that has forgotten, forgotten who it truly is. And I hear the words of the Christ again. Behold, I make all things new. May my vision of myself become new. May my vision of the world become new. May my vision of all beings become new. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Deep breath. Back to the rhythm of your heart, the rhythm of your breathing. Stretch a bit. Open your eyes when you're ready. I noticed. We're right on time anyway, aren't we?
Thank you, Jerry.
You're welcome, guys. Have a great week.
You too.
See you soon.
Thank you, Jerry.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Happy summer.
Thank you.
Jerry, thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
You're welcome. Hey, Greg, how you doing?
I'm okay. Thanks for the message.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
When is your surgery?